Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hi, this is Mary Robson for Nature Now. We are in the last full week of May. We've already had Rhododendron Festival. Strawberries are ripe, and it looks like spring has sprung, and we are headed for summer. Today we are having as our guests Laura Tucker and ambassadors for the project called Plant for the Planet. We will share interviews with her and her ambassador students. But first, as always, the mystery sound. We don't always give clues, but a clue to this one is that you would hear it near Kai Tai Lagoon. Now for observations. Charlie Fleshman is going to help with reading the observations for this week.
Butterflies, an adult pale tiger swallowtail, taking nectar and water drops from garden petunias. The unrolling tongue tastes and sips. It's properly called the proboscis.
And if you're interested in learning more about butterflies, there's a wonderful handbook called Butterflies of Cascadia by our friend Robert Michael Pyle, who has been here on Nature Now. It's the complete book on butterflies of this area. Well, more insects. Spittlebugs. These are very well named. If you have noticed frothy foam looking at the end of a stem, spittlebugs cover themselves in foam and they tuck into many different plant types in early summer. You'll see them at the joint where a stem meets another stem. They don't do much harm, but people do get a little bothered by them. What is spitting on my plants? Under the spit sits a tiny greenish insect about an eighth of an inch long. They produce these bubbles for protection, and then they go through partial metamorphosis before becoming adult. The adults hide very well, almost as well as the nymphs did. They're small and brown or gray, about a quarter of an inch long, and they are visible sometimes in late summer.
Snakiness. In a field near the ducka bush and adjacent to a small pond, garter snakes. Two about 18 inches long, so rather young, they can grow to nearly 40 inches long. They prefer living near water where some of their food lives, but can manage drier locations. Garter snake are the most common snake here. Some have three stripes along the back, and others are solid brown or quite variable in color. They flick their tongues to draw in scent, where the molecules go into a chamber in the mouth. Their species sounds like elegant, and they certainly move that way.
We are presenting today four people who have been involved with a relatively new project called Plant for the Planet. It's a project involving young people in 50 countries. And Laura Tucker, who is with us, has been a lifelong science educator, and she is starting this new project called Plant for the Planet on the Olympic Peninsula. Today we have with us several of the young people who are part of it. We have Riley Berkshire from Port Townsend High School, and the main participants, Max Allworth-Miles and Maya Dow, both from Blue Heron Middle School. Laura became interested in science education quite a number of years ago and has a commitment to ecology and environmental studies. She was originally studying to be a wildlife biologist, but her life took a turn when she worked as a naturalist for an outdoor school, teaching sixth graders about the natural world. She has created curriculum for a nationally acclaimed hands-on math and science program. Here in Port Townsend, she is a member of the Climate Action Committee, the L2020 Climate Outreach Group, and she presents for Al Gore's Climate Reality Project. Today, she will help us talk with Max and Maya and Riley about the project, Plant for the Planet. All of you have had different experiences with this project, and I was thinking we could just start going around the room and talking a little bit about how you got involved and what your experiences have been. I can say that my experience with Plant for the Planet has been very short, about 2 months, but the more I learn about it, the more impressed I get. So You can start throwing the ball around any way you want to about these questions, but I was thinking about, was there something special in your life that made you want to become a climate ambassador when the chance came up? Anybody can start. Max?
Well, I've learned a little bit about climate change just over my life, and once I saw this slideshow, I really got excited to be able to take part in the Climate Academy.
So this was what Laura Tucker brought to you after she had had some training on it and brought it to your school?
Yeah.
The difficulty, I think, about climate change is that it feels so big that you kind of don't have anywhere to look. And it sounds as if the slideshow really helped kind of put some points on things.
Yeah, it did.
Okay, that's great. Anybody else who want to say what brought you into this? Maya?
I also saw the slideshow, and my parents are teachers, and they talk a lot about like people in other places of the world, and I want them to have a good experience in life and not have to be affected by what people do halfway around the world.
Ah, so that the choices that we make as Americans, because we're so privileged, we have so much.
Yeah.
I think about it when I go to the kitchen and turn on the water and get a glass of water. I don't have to carry it on my head for miles to get my family some water. My sister lives on a ranch in Wyoming where you can't drink the water. She's been there for almost 50 years, and they have to bring their water in jars because the water on the ranch just has been ruined by all kinds of alkaline, and the cattle can drink it for some reason, but the humans can't. And that has just made me much more conscious of being a little grateful whenever I get a glass of water. So anybody else want to add what brought you into this, into Plant for the Planet?
Well, I was invited by Laura Tucker to attend the Academy, and so that's how I initially became involved. And then I fell in love with the project and the people involved and what they had to say and what they wanted to do. And since then, I've been trying my best to help the students in any way possible to make their dreams a reality.
And one of the reasons that you're helping kind of in an assistant position is that Plant for the Planet is something that is set up to work from 4th to 8th grade. Have I got that right?
Yes.
Roughly. Have you got a lot of 4th graders from Blue Heron involved, or even some?
Yes, we do, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'd say there's about 5 4th graders.
Okay. Can they bring as much to the project as we hope? I mean, there's nothing. My granddaughter's a 4th grader. I think it's the best age in the world, but I am rather partial. So it's just interesting that you might wind up as a group working with people who are not in your grade, but you get to know them, right? Does it work that way, Max?
Well, yeah, you do get to know them, and they can make the same amount of change as you can, I would say.
Okay. That's great. Anybody else want to toss anything in on what got you involved? Laura Tucker's here, but she's holding mum. And for those of you who heard the show on May 11th, all of this is going to seem quite familiar. For those of you who didn't, Plant for the Planet exists now in about 50 countries. It was started by a young man in Germany who started it when he was 9, and when he was 14, he thought he was getting a little old, because he wanted leadership to come from young people who got interested in it. This is a volunteer organization and very important, and this is the only one that exists on the Olympic Peninsula. Laura, what do you want to add?
Well, I might add to you that the leadership role here is really by the students, and what any adult volunteers such as Riley or myself do is that we help facilitate what they want to see happen, and that we really more are on the sidelines, and the students really are the ones that are the leaders in this, and they're the ones with the ideas, and it's just our job to help them if they need it. Mostly they don't.
I can second that.
Okay. Well, I would say by how relaxed this group looks on the radio, and I have to throw that in, they're not needing help with radio work at all. Have any of you ever met anybody from another group of ambassadors? Anybody can answer.
No, I haven't.
Laura, before we get off this, would you mention the lawsuit that has been filed? Because I think that's extremely important, and we didn't get it in the last show we did.
I'll clarify, the reason why they haven't met any other ambassadors is they just started.
That's right. This is less than 2 months old, right?
Yeah, it is, less than. So there will be opportunities for some cross-fertilization before long. But there's a group called the Children's Trust that has put forth a lawsuit in every one of the 50 states on behalf of children for their future. And we have the very first lawsuit in the United States in Washington State, Foster versus the Department of Ecology. And Foster is Michael Foster's two daughters, Stella and Zoe, as well as a number of other students that have signed on. And the judge has decided that, in fact, the Department of Ecology owes these students and their future and their health and the health of their planet an opportunity to work on a clean air component of some regulations and some policies, and Governor Inslee is very strongly behind that. Also, a student group in Oregon just last month also won their lawsuit. So it's starting to come forward that we really have a responsibility to these children to make sure that they have a livable planet to thrive on.
What's going on then is that the federal government is being confronted by the lawsuits that say, wait a minute, you're our government, we want you to do more than you're doing.
Federal and state. In Washington State here, it's the Department of Ecology.
And this is where the lawsuit will go forward, meaning that it will continue to be debated? How does that work? I'm out of my depth on this.
I'm not really clear on the details, but I do know that the judge last, I believe, September, found for the children. And then there was discussions with the Department of Ecology, and Ecology said, well, we're actually putting forth some plans for how to change this already. And the judge then agreed with the Department of Ecology, but has come back again now and said, you know, you're really not doing enough soon enough. And so the Department of Ecology now is working hard on this Clean Air Act and what's going to go in it.
I think that we're very fortunate to live in a state that is as aware as Washington State is about what things could be or not be done. Max, one of the things that they mentioned is that you have a particular interest in technology, and I wondered if you see any way of using Facebook or Twitter to get some of these ideas out?
I haven't used those types of social media.
Okay.
But I have started designing a sort of website / blog sort of thing that I might be able to use to get the word out about Plant for the Planet.
That's wonderful, because if you do, then we can just tell everybody on the radio when it's ready. Okay? Just send up a flag or something when you're ready to do that, and we'll tell people.
Will do.
Check in and listen. I was wondering, I'm sort of throwing this out maybe for Maya, but when you're in a situation where you have a whole lot of big, overwhelming things, it's kind of helpful to make a choice that sort of cuts it down to a size that you can think about or work with. Have you had the experience of choosing a particular project that you think about for Plant for the Planet, other than trees, because we know that will happen? But I've got a list here that takes up a whole page single-spaced of ideas that you guys had.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of ideas so far, and we have gotten together to do some posters a few weekends ago. And we started that at the Academy, too, as well, because those were some of the ideas that we could do easily there. We have a number of other ideas, and so, like Max said, he has started working on the website, and I don't know, we're just going to get together as much as we can and start working on the ideas we have.
That's extremely helpful. The trouble is, when you're volunteering for something and everybody's busy, you have to have a pretty good grip on wanting this to work. So I'll take comments if anybody has any. Max, you're looking like you might have one.
Well, I think that most of the kids here are pretty passionate about what they're doing, so I think that will be easy and it'll come fast.
One of the things that was on your list was making some presentations to different classrooms at Blue Heron. Has anybody done that?
I actually have. I did it for some fifth graders in an old class because we had started doing some things when I was in fifth grade. And so this year I went back and gave a presentation for them.
How did that feel for you?
We do presentations like in class and stuff, but that was the first time I had ever like gone back and done something. It was very educational and I had a lot of fun presenting it.
Did anybody ask you some interesting questions?
Well, I asked for some ideas and they had some very good ideas about what they could do.
Okay. One of these said inviting speakers for an assembly. Do you get a chance to get material for assemblies, or does the school figure it out for you? Do you have some freedom that way, Max?
I haven't really researched into that.
Okay.
But I would like to follow up with some people on that.
It would be helpful. I'm trying to remember who. It's a woman named Jude Rubin who dresses up as the plastic bag monster. Has anybody ever seen a picture of her?
Yeah.
In her plastic. What do you think, Max?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, it's sort of funny.
It is funny.
Which catches people attention, but it also gives ideas on, like, what's really happening.
She's wearing the idea of the number of plastic bags that most families use in a year. And she's got a great big costume. She is a funny person. And I asked her how she made it. And she said, well, there's a guy in Seattle who has this costume, and he loans it out. There would be room for two of Maya inside the costume, so I don't think that it's something you would do right away. But it has always given me a feeling that when something is funny, people will pay attention, even if the message is kind of serious. So anybody else want to talk about trees a little bit? One of the suggestions was that you might want to help the North Olympic Salmon Coalition with a plant nursery and growing some trees. Did that come from any of you, or is it just something that somebody else thought of? It's a good idea.
The students all brainstormed a bunch of these ideas.
Okay.
And unfortunately, not that many of them have been able to be completed.
Sure. As Laura said, it's early days here.
The plan is to work over the summer, and then when school kicks off again in the fall, to really have the whole school year to really work on all these projects and be able to do all of these things. And so that's when you'll see Plant for the Planet really active in the community would be this fall.
Okay. I keep thinking about ways that people might want
support.
Support, the very word. Yes. How would you like to be supported as a project?
I would say for any of those listening right now that the biggest thing that you can do for the students in our community would be just encouraging and supporting and understanding that 4th through 8th graders, those that are younger, those that are older, all have so many contributions that they can give and are very much capable of affecting change. And it's just a matter of listening to what they have to say, supporting them, and encouraging the change that they want to do. And looking at the responsibility of fixing the environment as an entire responsibility of everyone.
One of the things I was also wondering about was writing some letters to the newspaper, probably to the leader. And we took some pictures today. And I was just thinking that maybe one of the things you might want to do is just consider that little leader is an extremely good newspaper for a small town like this one. And they would be, I think, glad to hear from you and know who you are and what you're doing. Maya?
I'm just really excited to keep going on with this project. And I hope that we can get more students included and that it will turn out very successfully.
Thank you. Anything from you, Riley?
I just say that these kids give me hope, and that's a very powerful thing.
That is a powerful thing. It doesn't just happen on its own. And if you lose hope, then you get to the quality called despair, in which nothing can happen, which is, in French, it means no hope. So this is the hopeful project of Plant for the Planet. Okay. Laura, anything you want to end up with?
Well, to kind of echo what Riley said, when I was very hopeless at the end of my college career because the planet looked like it was in a horrible state, possibly nuclear annihilation, I really wanted to disappear into the woods and study wolves that I respected. I lost my respect for the human species. And taking that internship and working with those sixth graders completely turned me around because they clearly saw environmental issues and that we needed to do something, and we really needed to kind of stop talking and start planting, which is sort of the motto of Plant for the Planet.
That's wonderful.
And it caused me to change my career and started a nonprofit doing environmental education and never looked back. And those kids are in their 40s and 50s now. So,
and they haven't looked back either.
They haven't looked back
really
either.
Really wonderful.
Now, I have firm belief that our planet would be in much better hands if it was run by sixth graders. And a
now
few
that's
fourth graders
a fascinating
and a couple of high school
idea. Max and Maya both look as if they are ready to join the "Let's Lead the Troops" part, and Riley too. Thanks to all of you, to Max, to Maya, to Riley for bringing the approach that's going on at Blue Heron, and to Riley for helping out as kind of a senior advisor to all this. What I would like is, after you get going a little more, let's get back on the radio and tell everybody what's going on. all over again because this is so new. Thanks to all of you and for what you're doing for helping with climate change and awareness.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. It's been fun. This is the red-winged blackbird. Most of us who aren't even really great with birds can recognize this one. The call of the red-winged blackbird is familiar all across the United States, and they are listed as one of the most common of all American birds. They're right up there with crows and robins. Red-winged blackbirds live near damp areas, especially those with cattails or tall grasses where they hide their nests. They are in Kaitai Lagoon, and they can also move into areas near salt water and live up in a field if they have to. This is an extremely versatile bird. The female looks nothing like the male. She resembles a rather large, streaked brown sparrow, sort of dowdy. The male plumage is deep ebony. The whole bird is black and shiny as if lacquered. It has a shoulder badge in yellow and red. And this is what most people notice. It flashes on the wings. But the patch is showing only yellow unless the male has something to do. And the male shows the red patch if flying or courting a mate or defending its territory. So the red-winged blackbird is careful about when it shows its red. Events. On the 31st of May, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., there is a tidy-up project at Bullis Preserve, Old Fort Townsend Road. This is presented by Jefferson Land Trust, and what they are doing is taking volunteers to a 130-acre preserve not normally open to the public. They will explore the meadow. It's a historic farm site and orchard, and what they're going to do is go through the meadow and remove things not wanted, like scotch broom and thistles. That's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news of the natural community we all share. Nature Now repeats on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. If you miss these, you can check the podcasts at kptz.org.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Red-Winged Blackbird by Jack Christensen.
She sings a working man's song. Well, that's how he gets along. Red-winged blackbird flies alone. Philosophy, feather and bone. Well, dressed just like Johnny Cash. Well, yellow and crimson for some flash. Red-winged blackbird, please stay. You sing my blues away.